Like a lot of people, our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been listening to the presidential debates. But for Jeff, it's as much about how the candidates speak as what they have to say.
I know what I'd tell Al Gore if I were an advisor concerned about people's perception of him as stiff and formal. Just two words, only contract. When you're listening to the debate tonight, count how many times Gore contracts have or be when the context would allow it. In the first two debates, he was only doing it around 45% of the time. He doesn't just pronounce every word, he pronounces the spaces between them. I think that is the wrong choice. We have got to balance the budget. That same feature probably has a lot to do with people's impression of George Bush's kickback conviviality. The man contracts, between 85 and 90% of the time when the verb isn't emphasized. Words like I'm and theirs, I'm not even sure if Bush knows they have apostrophes in them. For Bush, going to is pronounced gonna, or even mona, as in, I'm gonna trust them. And Gore's we have got to always shows up in Bush's mouth as we gotta. We gotta ban partial birth abortions. We gotta make sure our seniors get the promise made. Of course, everybody uses gotta informally, but in a televised debate, it's what actors call a choice. Actually, when I looked up the transcript of the debate the next day on the CNN website, it turned out they'd changed most of Bush's gottas to need tos. That's a fair enough edit, since we gotta looks pretty rough on the page. But Gore doesn't need those editorial cleanups. The speech differences are all the more striking when you think that we've never had two presidential candidates whose linguistic backgrounds were so similar, at least on the face of things. Bush and Gore both grew up in Washington political families, both spent their youth going back and forth between southern states and northeastern prep schools, and both went to Ivy League universities before returning home. Unlike the other Southerners who've run for national office in the last 50 years, both men came by their accents in a more or less deliberate way. If we want to explain the differences, then, we'd have to start way back, or way deep. Maybe it begins with the fathers that each was named after. Senator Albert Gore Sr. was the son of a hardscrabble farmer from Possum Hollow, Tennessee. That was country before country was cool. And by all accounts, Gore Sr. was highly self-conscious about his language. He practiced his elocution and used words he found in the dictionary. And as a famously demanding father, it isn't likely he would have tolerated any gonas or gottas around the family dinner table. It's a fastidiousness that Al Jr. finds it hard to break with. He can cultivate that accent and make a sedulous effort to drop his G's. But people still find it difficult to get his name in the same sentence as the word homespun, and nobody's ever going to refer to him as Tennessee Al. Al Gore Sr. is a far cry from George Herbert Walker Bush, himself the son of a senator from a patrician Connecticut family. As a young man, it's true, George W. had ambivalent feelings about assuming that New England mantle of noblesse oblige. And that youthful rebellion is evident in the extravagant embrace of Texas vowels. In fact, the other day I was listening to a C-SPAN rebroadcast of the 1988 vice presidential debate, and it struck me that Bush's accent's a lot thicker than Lloyd Benson's. But then, Benson was born and educated in Texas, not Connecticut, and he didn't have anything to prove. But George W. got one linguistic legacy from his father that didn't have to be taken in for a new climate, his nonchalant ungrammaticality. It's the hallmark of the old WASP establishment, a class that regards taking pains with language as the unerring signal of somebody who's trying too hard. As it turns out, it was a happy accident for W. The tousled syntax that served the Bushes well at Andover and Kennebunkport turned out to be just the thing for campaigning in West Texas, none of them places that value an excessive attention to subject-verb agreement. There's a lot of procedures that have not kept up. There's no prescription drug benefits. There's no drug therapies. There's no preventing medicines. Of course, Bush Jr. sometimes tries to rise to the occasion, the same way Gore Jr. tries to sink to it. When W. wants to sound presidential, he'll try to construct a sentence that suggests some grander sense of mission, what his father used to call the vision thing. But it's like somebody assembling a barbecue. When the sentence is finished, there are always half a dozen parts left over. It's odd that neither candidate has been able to overcome those early influences. It gives you a new appreciation for politicians who have that capacity to create a resonant public voice while preserving the illusion of intimate speech. Clinton does it brilliantly, of course. And so did Reagan. His syntax might have been shaky on occasion, but unlike either of the Bushes, he usually got to the end of his sentences around the same time the period did. When you see how difficult it is for the present candidates to achieve that effect, you realize how early in life Clinton and Reagan's self-fashioning must have begun. I don't know where the gift comes from exactly, but it probably doesn't help to have a strong father.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.